Just want to say thank you to our sponsor, Art of Plumbing. For all your plumbing needs, remember Art of Plumbing. Striving to meet the customer's needs in a timely, professional manner, there's only one name. It's Art of Plumbing. Always reasonable rates, Art of Plumbing. To satisfy all your plumbing needs, of course, remember it's Art of Plumbing at 541-951-9405. That's Art of Plumbing. I just sit down with my guest, Catherine, today. We're going to be talking about a topic that I think we're all not really good at. In fact, I think some of us really struggle with this. I know my hands up. Sometimes we have a really hard time of letting things go. What are we going to be talking about? Well, stay tuned for that. I hope your seatbelt's buckled because this could be a wild ride. And I hope you're ready for it because you know I am. So here we go. Hey, come take a walk with me. Not like you used to do. Something different. Put yourself in other people's shoes. Open up your mind and open up your eyes and change your direction. Welcome in to Other People's Shoes. I am your host, Neil, and today I sit across from a longtime friend. She's been married 35 years. She has three kids. She's a grandma of four kiddos. She also, in my mind, is probably one of the best people to help you enter into worship. She has a voice like an angel. Please help me welcome my good friend, Catherine. Catherine, how are you?
Doing really well today. I'm thankful to be here with you and, you know, grateful for the opportunity to get together and just, you know, have a conversation, shoot the breeze, talk about life, all those things that we like to do.
Right. And I think that's the key to this whole thing, right, is I always promote this show as this conversational dialogue. So really that's what it is for me. It's really just a dialogue of sorts. And I'm excited to see what happens and see where we go and see what we get to cover. So with all that, Catherine, you have kind of a hard story, right?
Life had its challenges for me, definitely. Yeah, it was a rough beginning for sure.
Right. And with that rough beginning, I think it almost lends to this idea of how do we forgive others, right? Because as I mentioned kind of the onset, you're a worship gal, you're a worship leader in a lot of respects. So you've kind of grown up in the church for the most part, right?
Yeah, I didn't really grow up in the church. My spiritual beginning, you know, my religious beginning was actually in a family that's kind of a Heinz 57 when it comes to, you know, different religious perspectives. And, you know, at the same time, I mostly spent time from about the age of 9 on up to the age of 17 in what most people might term the New Age community. So things like, you know, I went very early on to a mind dynamics training, which was an extension of EST at age 10. My mother got special permission for me and my brother to participate in that particular training program. And then, you know, things like I attended the Berkeley Psychic Institute as a child, got some training in, you know, several of their spiritual practices. And it wasn't until I was, you know, part of that growing up space was being involved in a community in the Nevada County area that, you know, was what some might consider and call a cloistered or cultic community, you know, just a group of people who were living together and, you know, doing their spiritual walk together. And when I was 17, you know, I've always sung from the time I was 2. My mom has a very early recording of me, so I've been singing as long as I could talk. And part of that experience was recording, starting around age 12. I'd do some background vocal recording for local artists who kind of lived in the community. And at the same time got really interested in training, classical vocal training, which was offered through my high school. Very thankfully, we had a teacher who did that for us and gave us free classical training. And it was actually when I got involved in that choir and in that group that I was introduced to God and became a Christian. And so from the time I was about 18 up until now, the present, that's been my commitment, my experience, my saving grace.
That's awesome. I didn't know any of that. So good stuff.
Yeah.
That's such a good stuff.
I come from a super diverse background,
yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to know more maybe about the compound, so maybe we'll get into that a little bit. Maybe not call it that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Compound per se. But so, Catherine, as I said, you know, being married 35 years and being a mom, what do you think is the hardest thing for you to do in those respects?
You know, I honestly, the thing that I think about when you ask me about marriage and being a mom is staying true to who you are as a person, because those are parts of who you are. And at the same time, it also means staying true to, you know, the path that you choose to walk and the commitments that you've made. And along with that, the interesting thing about the topic that you and I are going to be covering today, the thing that I remember about that is that also means giving a lot of grace, extending forgiveness and asking for forgiveness, because the reality is that we're imperfect, and the constant is we will make mistakes. We will do things the wrong way at some point in time and have to ask forgiveness, make amends, you know, whatever your description is of that process.
And yeah, building on that, that's kind of my whole idea, is this idea of forgiveness, right? Is that a hard area for you still in a lot of respects?
Definitely. I struggled with it this week. There are, you know, relationships in life are complex. They're not simple. They're not linear. And so when you make a commitment to enter into relationship, whether that is a friendship, a marital relationship, you know, parental relationship, a sibling relationship, or a work colleague relationship, you're making agreements. There are some, you know, implicit agreements that you're making when you enter into those relationships, and, you know, that requires work all the time. And so, you know, I definitely had some challenges with that this week, and part of me was thinking, well, of course, because we're going to be talking about forgiveness. So yes, you're being tested in this area again to see, are you really going to be consistent and true to what you're going to be talking about with Neil?
So why is forgiveness so hard for you? I know you kind of alluded to it a few times, but is there a moment in your past specifically that you can think of that you really had to forgive somebody that maybe you didn't want to?
Oh, definitely. 100%. The thing about forgiveness, I think that's so interesting from my perspective and having, you know, talked with people over many, many years, is the fact that there are those moments when we have absolutely been wronged. Wasn't anything we did, wasn't anything we asked for, might not have even been anything that we created, either through our circumstance, where we placed ourselves, who we hung out with, whatever that is. And so that really means that you have to make a choice. Me personally, I had to make that choice. You know, part of my story is that my mom and dad divorced when I was right around the age of eight. And that changed life dramatically for me. And it wasn't just the loss of this, you know, family ideal that I'd come to expect, stability, security, all of those things that go along with that. It meant that I was placed in circumstances where I really recognized I had no control. It's this interesting thing as a kid that, you know, we get comfortable in our environment. And so somehow we think we control that environment, right? Through behavior or whatever. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, for me personally, when mom and dad went through the divorce and all of a sudden mom worked full time, my mother was a stay at home mother. And so then she worked full time and was not home. And we were placed into daycare. I recognized immediately I didn't have control. And the way that I recognized that is that the place where we were is someplace that my mother had vetted. You know, my mother has a degree in early childhood education. She was a teacher. Of all people, you would think she was well qualified to vet a caregiving situation. And yet, you know, I recognized mom was going through her own transition, you know, through this dramatic change that happened in her life. And so the daycare situation where we were placed was abusive and not just emotionally and physically abusive, but, you know, there was a young boy there who abused me. And then the interesting thing was once mom found out, she immediately took us out of that situation, put us in another situation where she, again, vetted that family, and unbeknownst to us at the time, I was abused again by that boy. And what we discovered is the two boys knew each other and they were sharing notes. And so I came out of that situation as a young child and went into a different situation a few years later where mom decided to change relationships very quickly. I left to go visit my father during the summer. He lived on the East Coast, which is where we're from, and came back. And the man that mom had been engaged to, who I loved dearly, she had left. They had mutually agreed not to marry, and she was already in a very deep relationship with some other person. And we ended up moving in with him. And then from the time I was 12 until I was 17, was abused by him. And so what, you know, one of the things that's interesting about that situation is that I had to choose to forgive this man and these boys. And it, to me, honestly, it was a little easier with the boys because they were younger. And I don't know that they really fully understood the gravity of the situation. You know, I, having raised two boys myself and a daughter now, I recognize that at certain ages, hormones rage and they take over. And, you know, you play games like doctor and whatever, and I'll show you mine if you show me yours kind of a thing. And it's about exploration and curiosity and all of those things and about those hormones that we may or may not have learned to control yet. So it was a little easier to forgive those young boys. Very difficult when you have a man in a trusted position and family who takes advantage of you to forgive. And so that was a long process. And I also recognized that I had a choice. I had a couple of girlfriends at the time in my early, late teens, early 20s, who had gone through a similar situation, and their life took a very different path. Their life became very destructive. They had issues with drugs and alcohol. They had a continuing pattern of choosing men in their life who would take advantage and abuse them. And I recognized early on I had a choice to make. And that choice was to either go that direction or to take a different direction. And so the direction I chose to take was to work on forgiveness. And, of course, the challenge is, this man wasn't there to say, I did this to you. I'm sorry. I won't ever do it again. Will you forgive me? And in fact, he offended again. And so you kind of have to choose what to let go of and what to concentrate on when you're working through forgiveness with someone. And in this particular case, as with other cases, I chose the path of forgiveness because it was about my long-term emotional health, stability, well-being, and growth in life.
That was a lot to digest, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go back over some of that. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right. So the boys you knew sort of well through the daycare and all that, right?
Yeah, didn't really know them at all until got into the daycare. Okay. And yeah.
Okay. And so these boys, obviously, they don't face any criminal charges or anything like that, right?
No.
Okay. So we said pre-show and we laughed about it. You know, we're not going to talk about your age, but what about what year is this?
With the boys, you know, again, it was between the ages of, I would say, you know, like 7 to 9, 10.
Right. And did you know what they were doing was wrong to you at the time?
Yeah. I think that's the interesting thing about, human beings who have a strong, sense of self. We know when something's wrong.
Right.
You can feel it in your bones. You don't have to have somebody tell you.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel right. And you know, it's not.
Right, you just knew it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as this boyfriend of your mom's, you obviously at that point, because it had already happened to you a few times already, you knew for a fact that what he was doing was wrong.
Absolutely, 100%.
And did your mom know that the abuse was going on with him specifically?
No, not at the beginning. He actually, it's kind of sort of the classic situation where he threatened mom if I told her, and he threatened me if I told her. So it was that kind of classic situation.
So he's telling you this while he's doing the abuse of you and
yes.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Just trying to understand that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're walking around with that.
And I'm walking around with that. A lot of responsibility. And at the same time, you know, I tell people I was an adult very young in life, you know, kind of the voice of reason, the voice of maturity in a lot of ways, because I can remember having conversations with my mom early in life around age 10, you know, where I had very strong core beliefs and values about, you know, sleeping with people before marriage and, you know, placing yourself in a situation where morally for me as a kid, it didn't seem right. And it seemed unsafe too. And so, you know, for me, it was about safety as well as the moral compass.
How did that make you feel as a kid? Did you really feel like the weight of the world was really on your shoulders in a lot of respects because of this abuse and all of that, because of the fact that, you know, he's threatening, you know, if you tell anybody, this is going to happen to you. I mean, how do you cope with that?
You know, it is a huge weight for anyone who goes through that kind of experience in life. And I can only speak about how that was for me. And
right,
for
of
me,
course.
What I recognized and understood early on is that there are, in a way, a couple things that occurred to me. Number one, I remember later in life, right around my early 20s, just before I got married, going into intensive therapy to work through some of the lingering issues around this situation, because I really wanted to be able to go into marriage, continue to work on that as I needed to, but have a completely different perspective to be healthier. And so I remember sitting down and asking that therapist, do I have the word abuse tattooed on my forehead? Because I just feel like, I felt like I had an open door sign or something that, you know, it invited that in almost, although I know how crazy that sort of sounds.
Because
no, you don't invite that in.
I think that sounds right
wonder.
On. Yeah, I mean, once I could see,
sure.
If I'm following your train of thought, you know, once you're like, okay, that happened to me, that was terrible, but twice, I mean, not to sound by any means make light of your situation, but it's
sure.
almost like being struck by lightning, right?
Yeah.
Like getting once struck once is like, okay, wow, okay, that happened. That was terrible. I don't ever want to go through that again.
Right.
But then, you know, the idea of getting struck again and then again, I mean, I could see how you would feel that way.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I think anyone would feel that way.
Exactly. And so, you know, there was that perspective. And then of course, the other thing that truly occurred to me is that there were really three people who needed to be forgiven in that situation and for me to work through. And the first was, of course, the abuser, right? That was the bigger issue. But the other was my mom. And that's been a continuing work in progress and road. But then the third person was me. I had to forgive me. And so, you know, to be able to sit down and work on that and go through each of those was important.
You bring up yourself. Why forgiving yourself? I don't get that. I really don't.
Well, you know, again, going through this multiple times in life, you begin to wonder, is it me? Is it me? Is it something I did, said, whatever? And some of that has to do with my growing up experience too. You know, I grew up in a military family, and I don't just mean one parent. I mean all my grandparents, you know, my grandfathers, my uncle, my father, cousin, my husband also was in the military. And so there's this long line and strong military tradition. Well, growing up in a military family, and also these were officers, all of them, with the exception of my cousin. And so the way that you are raised in the family is very different. And part of the way that you are raised in the family is to always look at your surroundings very critically to improve. It's about improvement. It's about following the rules and all of those things. And so I think there's some of that upbringing that caused me to look at this situation and ask, what is it about me? And, you know, quite frankly, just the number of times to have this happen to someone in life. I think for me, it makes logical sense that anyone would sit back and think, you know, what is it? Is it me? What am I doing, saying, to maybe contribute to the possibility that this could happen again? And so that meant forgiving me, because not because I had done anything wrong, but because, for instance, one of the things that I recognize many survivors go through is the question about, why didn't I tell someone sooner? Because as an adult, it makes a whole lot of sense that you would do that. And yet, recognizing as a child where you are emotionally, spiritually, physically, and the amount of control that is exerted over you, so of course it makes complete sense that you would not have felt comfortable going to anyone else, because you thought that your mother was in danger, you were in danger. And so some of that also was the idea that I needed to forgive certain key people in my life too. Because then the thought process is, how did you not recognize what was happening? How did you not recognize that this outgoing, you know, effervescent 12-year-old all of a sudden changed and wasn't the same person? And that there was a driving force behind why that was happening. And so it was forgiving the abuser, forgiving mom, forgiving me, forgiving other key players in my sphere, my life, who didn't really recognize that.
So because we're friends, I know a little bit of this, not all of it, of course, of what you're sharing today. But I wonder, how does your relationship with God play into this at all?
So my relationship with God is really key for me, because it, you know, at 17, still going through this abuse, becoming a Christian, one of the first things that I recognized wasn't that, you know, there was this big being in the sky that was going to immediately change my life and make everything safe and happy and okay for me. But what I immediately recognized, you know, reading the Word, the Bible, and being around some really mature believers who I was careful to select, meant that there was hope that my life would not always be this way, that this was a moment in time. You know, Ecclesiastes talks about a season for everything. And, you know, there's even a famous song that talks about, you know, the season for everything.
The birds, right?
Yes.
Did I get that one right?
Yeah.
All right.
And so, you know, I knew that this was going to pass. And at that point, I also recognized about myself that I'm resilient. And so what I chose to do was to believe in the hope that God was providing for me and that relationship was providing for me. And that's when things changed. I mean, it was very shortly after I became a Christian that the whole story came out. Mom immediately took us out of that house into another situation and divorced him. And so, yeah.
But some would say, if we're playing the other side of the coin, that if your God, and my God too, if our God is so good, why would he allow such a crazy thing to happen to such a nice, sweet little girl?
And, you know, that's a question I wrestled with, too, because there are moments where I've been really angry at God, too. You know, it's like, hey, where were you? Because I had a recognition
of... What would be your answer to that?
Well, you know, I had a recognition of God from the time I was 12. And I think that that was, I don't know, it was just very inherent with me. And what I recognized in not only reading the Bible, but just... again, getting around some really mature, strong Christian people, women in particular, is the fact that God gave us free will. He allows us to choose. And we know that we are imperfect people. And so, you know, the reality is that because we live in this world where sin exists, and people have the right to choose their actions, that means working through it. And so really, honestly, if we're talking about blame, blame doesn't belong with God. Blame belongs with the man who abused me, clearly and squarely. And blame also belongs with the mom who made choices that put me in that sphere. And you could also say that blame also belongs on my shoulders for not telling someone sooner. And at the same time, I recognize, you know, how crazy that sounds because, again, as a child, you are in a really untenable situation where you're controlled and there isn't really necessarily an out. You're just looking for the adults around you to recognize what's going on and pull you out. And so, again, it kind of circles right back to forgiveness. And at the same time, I did have to work through that conversation with God, rail at him, yell at him, you know, ask why, you know, why me, and why me multiple times, because it wasn't just once. And so again, what I always hold on to is that, you know, God loves me more than anyone on this earth could love me. He certainly hurt when I hurt. He feels happiness and joy when I feel happiness and joy. And I recognize that those people had choices and they didn't always make good choices, just like I haven't always made good choices in life.
Any regret about any of that situation or just regrets in general that you wish you could almost have a do-over again that you've struggled with again on some level with forgiveness?
I have never asked for a do-over. However, I have said multiple times and continue to say, I would not change what happened to me because I also recognize that what happened to me has informed who I am today. And so, you know, there is a level of compassion, understanding, empathy, sympathy I have that other people may not have in life because of what I went through. And at the same time, it's given me the ability to recognize and I guess for lack of a better word, be able to set better boundaries around relationship and not take in stuff that's not mine and also hold other people accountable when they're trying to justify a decision, an action, or something else in their life that doesn't make sense.
So you mentioned your daughter. She's amazing. Sometimes,
thank you.
Right? No, she is. She comes You guys are good parents. You guys are doing it right, I think, in a lot of respects. And I think that obviously comes out in your kids. It's a reflection of who you are, I think, a lot of times, right? In our in our kids as who we are as parents. But the thing that I'm coming back to is, were you a little more mindful when your daughter was growing up on where you placed her and who was around her and all of that?
I was extremely mindful, even when the boys were growing up, about where we placed them, who they were with, and, you know, what those circumstances were going to look like. And for the majority of their growing up years, with the exception of a couple years with the boys, they've actually been with family members who, you know, we knew and trusted, who lived near us. And so we were extremely fortunate in that regard. And prior to that, you know, we hired a nanny who we went through a rigorous interviewing process to find that person, and she was wonderful. And then, you know, there was one little hiccup with a caregiver who we used for about a month and a half, and then pulled the boys out when we saw some red flags after going through the interview process and said, yeah, no, this is not a safe environment. And then Hannah's always been with family. Hannah's never been anywhere else.
Hannah being your daughter.
Our daughter.
That's who we're referring to there. So how has life been walking in the idea that if we don't have unforgiveness, we really are paralyzing ourselves? How's that been for you? Do you feel like, and for others who might struggle with unforgiveness, what advice would you give them?
You know, really, honestly, unforgiveness, you know, there are a couple of aspects. The first, of course, is forgiveness is really about a reset. It's about a reset. It's almost, you know, you mentioned do-over. And it's not as though it's a do-over so that someone else can wrong you again in the way that they wronged you before. But it's definitely a reset so that you can reframe life in a way that's more meaningful, more positive, and allows you to walk out of whatever that negativity is, for me anyway, into the light. That's really what it's about. When you hold unforgiveness, you know, it does some crazy things, not only to your body physically, it also does some crazy things to your outlook on life, because you're stuck in that cycle of negativity and you're stuck in reliving whatever that wrong was so that you cannot move forward. And so forgiveness is the key to unlocking the door to being able to move forward and, you know, walk into hope, gratitude, and, you know, a better life.
Have you yourself ever been stuck in unforgiveness other than during the abuse? Has there ever been any other moments?
Yeah, this month.
What happened this month?
You know, I have some friends and relationships with some friends, and got into a situation where, again, I just kept getting stuck on what was happening in the moment, that negativity, that cycle that, you know, I just found myself running over and over again, this perceived wrong that had been done to me. And the great news about practicing forgiveness over life is, if you really are diligently practicing forgiveness, then you're able to move out of that much quicker because you recognize how destructive it is. And yet, you know, there are those times where you get stuck on what was the wrong that was done to you, right? And this idea, I think, is also coupled with justice. You know, here we have this innate need for justice. And so being able to walk through that and really put that in perspective and let that go so that you can move through forgiveness is important.
So how does perseverance in your mind play into your story?
You know, really, it's as simple as perseverance is all about getting up and moving forward. It really is. If you don't persevere, then the thing I think about is basically, you know, you sit on the side of the road and you wait to die. You don't fully engage in life. You're not really living. And I don't know how that is for other people, but that's kind of my view. And so for me, resilience and perseverance is about recognizing that until it doesn't happen anymore, we have this expectation that the sun will shine tomorrow. It's a new day. It's a day for us to start over again and to see if we can do it better than we did the day before. And so perseverance and resilience is really all about, again, continuing to work through those agreements and those commitments that you make in life.
So building on that some more, just this idea of, has there ever been that one moment in your life that you're just like, man, I can't let go of that. I won't move on from it. This is just always going to be my story, my identity. I mean, maybe it was the abuse, maybe it was something else, but I mean, is there anything in your life that you're just like, man, I mean, because I can think in my own life, right? There are some choices I made along the way that I'm like, I have to almost daily tell myself, you're forgiven from that. Move on. Let it go. I mean, like the movie Frozen says, is there anything like that for you?
There are. And, you know, I was thinking about a couple of those just this week. There are those things where, you know, you made choices in life and it's difficult to move on from them.
Do you have one in particular that comes to mind?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think about is maybe relationship choices that I made in the past. And it's like, oh my gosh, why did you do that? That was dumb. And so, you know, feeling, for me, it's any choice in my life where there's guilt or shame attached to it, really.
Right.
If there's guilt or shame attached to it, that's something that, for me personally, can occasionally come back up again. And I have to do exactly what you've expressed, which is, okay, that's in the past. You're a new creation. That is not who you are. You were forgiven. You need to let that go. And, you know, it's really interesting because God talks about throwing our sin into the sea of forgetfulness. And yet, for whatever reason, when we have strong emotion attached to a memory, we continue to relive that memory. We continue to bring it up, even though, you know, you understand that God says, what was that again?
Well, and you mentioned that, right? I mean, as you sit before me today, Catherine, and ever since I've known you, your self-esteem level in my mind, in a lot of respects, is almost through the roof. I mean, it's almost at this, like, you know, 10 apex, you know, just this amazing level. I mean, has it always been that way?
No, it has not always been that way. And it's not always that way on any given day. I mean, apparently you and I always see each other on really good days.
The sun is always shining. It's never raining.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly. I actually, again, this week, it was a challenge for me. You know, I definitely was feeling a lack of self-confidence. And again, it was around that negative situation that was happening. And I recognized finally, I made that decision again. I need to work through forgiveness on this situation because there's my part and there's their part. And I can't be responsible for their part. And I don't even need them to acknowledge their part. I need to acknowledge my part and ask for forgiveness. And the other interesting thing about that is forgiveness is not saying I'm sorry. I'm sorry is not forgiveness, because often when we say I'm sorry, there's no acknowledgement for what we are sorry for. It's kind of like, you know, remembering when you were kids and, you know, you had a fight with a sibling or a best friend and, you know, the adults would come in and say, okay, you have to say you're sorry. And you'd almost do that, you know,
sorry.
I'm sorry for kind of whatever I just did to you.
Eye rolled, not even looking at you.
Right, exactly. When you ask for forgiveness, you say, I'm sorry, will you please forgive me? Or don't even say I'm sorry, just say, will you please forgive me? There is a humility that goes with that statement. because you are listing your wrongs and acknowledging that what you did, said, whatever, had a great impact on the other person. And in humility, you're going to them and saying, I recognize what I did to you and how that hurt you or impacted you. And I would like for you to consider forgiving me. And more times than not, I don't ever remember a time where somebody said, you know what, I'm not going to forgive you for that. Because people recognize, again, in that moment, there is some form of small justice because I've been humbled and come to you and listed my wrongs and acknowledged how that made you feel. And so, you know, it's there's a much greater chance that someone's going to be willing to say, I forgive you, and then hug it out or do whatever your practice is.
Yeah, I like the hug it out method sometimes, yeah. For sure. That seems more friendlier. So I'm just curious, is there anywhere along the way that you have ever in any way said, I can't forgive that person or I won't forgive that person? Is there anyone that comes to mind right offhand?
Yeah, the abuser for sure. And even my mom. There were times where my relationship with my mom was strained. I can't forgive her for not recognizing that something was going on, or I can't forgive her for making a choice to go into relationship with this, you know, human being who I considered to be terribly horrible. And so that's difficult because it means going back to working through forgiveness. And the other thing that I think in my experience people don't understand is forgiveness is a process. It's not a one and done. Sometimes it's a one and done, but again, any situation you've experienced where there is great emotion, that's different. That's going to take work over time, and you'll work through, you know, that process of forgiveness more than once. And you'll need to do that because there is such intense emotion that goes along with that experience. And that also includes anything that's happened in life, you know, where you as an individual have made a choice, whether that's something that maybe didn't really hurt anybody but you, or maybe it's something that hurts somebody else and you. And so you'll have to work through that forgiveness over again as well. And the other thing is, you know, part of that personal forgiveness hinders your ability to receive forgiveness. It really does. And not in my case, it's the ability to receive forgiveness from God, but it's also the ability to receive forgiveness from other people because you don't believe you deserve it. You believe that, you know, you're a broken person or you've done something so terribly wrong. So therefore, why would someone forgive me? And, you know, I walked through that with a woman who is someone I admire and respect, strong, you know, Christian woman. And she challenged me on that by saying, you know, Catherine, you're calling God a liar by not accepting that forgiveness for this thing that you've done where you are having difficulty forgiving yourself. You say you're a Christian, you say that you've received God's forgiveness, but you really haven't. And in essence, you're calling him a liar and you're spitting on the gift of grace that he's given you. And that was such a profound moment for me and such a word picture for me that really helped me understand, again, you know, that narcissistic view that we can get stuck in when we're stuck in our own head, that it's all about me, it's all about me. And it was a profound moment because it helped me to release that and to say, you know, if I'm all in and I'm receiving that gift of grace that God's given me, then that means forgiving myself, which also increases my ability to forgive others.
You mentioned your choice. What is the one choice in life that you've had the hardest time forgiving yourself for, do you think?
I had an abortion early on in life. And, you know, at the time, it was what the world said was okay to do. And, you know, I I did. I made that choice, and it was really difficult to forgive myself for that.
Now, obviously, I'm not a woman. Mm-hmm. Last time I checked. Sorry, trying to make levity. Probably shouldn't in this type of situation. But what did that walk us through that? What led to that choice, and then maybe what led to you, what led to you being able to forgive yourself? Because that's a pretty deep one, I would think, for most ladies, right? I mean, and even in our faith, some would absolutely 100% probably like judge you in a lot of respects.
Definitely.
Because in our faith, that goes against everything we believe in.
Well, you know, I I've been judged in a couple different ways for that topic. One is, judged for making the choice to have the abortion. Later becoming a Christian woman and understanding what that choice really meant in the eternal perspective, feeling guilt and shame over that choice. Then there are those who, you know, judge me for feeling guilt and shame over a choice that the world says is okay to make. And so here's what I recognize about that. I was in that abusive situation. I was not in any way, shape, or form able to take care of a child, and also didn't really fully understand back then that there were other choices like adoption or some other opportunity. And so I made that choice because I thought there is no way I am bringing a child into this situation. It's not going to happen. And at the same time, you know, becoming a Christian woman and really fully understanding the gift of creation and the gift of life, I now understand that puts me on a footing with other people who have killed another human being. And that gives me great guilt and shame. And at the same time, I also, again, recognize that if I have really, truly been forgiven by God and received the grace of forgiveness, then I need to be able to forgive myself and move forward, which does not mean that I don't recognize the decision I made and the impact that had not only on my life, but on, you know, the life of the other person involved and, the life of the unborn child. But it certainly means that I can receive that forgiveness and walk through that situation and understand that's a piece of my life now that God can use for his glory and his good.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, did the pregnancy come out of the abuse then?
It did not.
Okay. Okay. I just want to be clear on that. Okay.
Yes.
Wow. How long did you carry that around with you?
I still carry it around with me today. I don't think, again, anything that has a great emotional impact, it's part of the fabric of who you are. Right. And, you know, the beauty of that is that we all have experiences in life that have shaped us. And it's part of the patchwork of our life that, in my experience, is used to bless other people. Either because you're able to extend grace, compassion, forgiveness, understanding, sympathy, empathy. Those are important things in life that we need to be able to extend to other people.
My grandmother used to make quilts. Maybe your mom and maybe even grandma made some quilts as well, right?
My mom is a quilter, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. See, I didn't even know that, too. Catherine Fact number 875, maybe. But with that, I think a lot of our story is like a patchwork quilt. You know, it has different little patches that kind of keep coming together. I don't know why my mic keeps doing that. It's so weird. Anyway, I like the fact that your story, no matter what, has in a lot of respects this little kind of patches of spots, mm-hmm. that now makes this menagerie of glory, really.
It is. I mean, you know, I recognize, no matter, again, what your belief system is, we hear words like what you reap, you sow. We hear things like karma, you know, the law of attraction, you know, what you put out, you attract to you.
We put it out to the universe and it's going to come out to us. Yeah,
exactly. And really, you know, for me, it's about taking that patchwork of life and being able to create something positive out of it. And it was, you know, first the ability to choose a man who was completely opposite of the abusive person who was in my life. My husband, Kevin, who has been a rock for me. He is the balance in my life. It's completely opposite for me in so many ways, and yet the perfect partner for me. And then to go on and say, I am not going to create a life where my children grow up and don't feel secure and safe. And that doesn't mean they're never going to be, you know, they're never going to feel moments of insecurity or a lack of safety, because we can't guarantee that for our kids. But what it did mean is that I could create a family life where they would grow up feeling loved and, you know, appreciated and challenged. And I remember one of the very first conversations Kevin and I had about raising kids, for instance, is I said, you know, I've been an adult from the time I was 11, 10, 11, and I want our kids to remain kids as long as they possibly can. And I don't care, you know, what the world and our friends say about that. That's my perspective on life. And we were able to create that for our kids. They were able to, you know, stay kids a whole lot longer than I was. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things I think come out of that patchwork that we're talking about. The choices that we make in creating that future life that affect other people, because we're making a commitment to be in relationship with them.
And again, I think that just adds to the menagerie that we're talking about, right? This patchwork quilt of sorts. So, Catherine, I want to think back just for a quick second. However old you are now, we're just going to leave that a mystery, because some questions just don't need to be answered, right?
Sure.
What would you tell that young girl back in those days, when all the abuse and all of the other stuff's going on with her? What would you go back in time and tell her? Like, she's swinging on the swings at recess, carrying that giant burden of, you know, I can't tell anyone, keeping this massive, massive secret. What would you tell her?
This is not about anything in you that's broken or needs to be fixed. Life will be different and full and magical, and you are complete. You are enough right now the way that God created you. And there is great gifting that God has given you. And there will come a time in life where you will not be in this situation anymore. And you are going to have the ability to create the life you want and to use those gifts to make the world a better place.
Would she believe you?
In that moment, I don't think she would.
She might be a little freaked out even,
right? She might be a little freaked out.
Like, oh, who are you? I know what's hiding underneath your bed. You know,
exactly.
Whatever. Okay. I know where the cookie jar is. It's,
that's right.
You know, six places to the left. Whatever. So do you really think she'd believe you?
I don't think so in that moment. However, I, again, having gone through, you know, a lot of the training that I went through as a child, which has served me really well even today, there would have been those moments where I pondered. You know, I remember one of the things I did starting when I was about 12, 13 years old is that after being abused, I would often be awake in the middle of the night, and I would literally get up and I would run out of the house. And just about a quarter of a mile away, there was a pond. And I would go out and I would sit at the edge of that pond, and I would just look at the stars, and I would start talking to the stars. I would start talking to this person who I began to recognize as God. And I would ponder, you know, what was going on and try to figure out how it was going to change and what this was going to mean for me in life later on, even at that early age. And so I do think that there would have been a moment where this young girl would have said, yeah, you know, that lady that came to talk to me, I think I'm going to think about that a little bit more. She's probably right. I don't feel it right now because I feel really unsafe and insecure and, you know, stressed and all of those things that go along with holding that kind of experience in life. But, yeah.
Well, Catherine, I got to thank you. I'm always baffled and kind of almost stunned and a little bit dumbfounded in a lot of respects when people agree to come on. Like, I ask people, you know, I'm always hustling this show and always promoting it, but why did you want to come on?
You know, it was about this idea that it is important for us to spend a moment walking in someone else's shoes.
I love how you said that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was what intrigued me about it. It was the idea that we could have a transparent, real conversation about life, no judgment, no preconceived notions or ideas, and you know, really just spend a moment walking in someone else's shoes. You know, it's something that I've said for a long time to many, many, many people. We each have our own story, and it's important. The story is important. And what's even more important is the story needs to be heard. You know, a lot of the hurts that are going on in the world today are people crying out for their story to be heard, acknowledged, recognized, so that they can take the patchwork quilt that is their life and make the world a better place. And when we are in the situation where we cannot tell our story or feel that we've told our story and we're not heard, that has devastating impact on us as individuals and on the world as a whole. So I love that, you know, you've created this space where you can spend a brief amount of time in your day and you can, you know, spend some time in someone else's shoes and hear their story. Take what you want to take, leave the rest. And, you know, the hope is that the world will be a better place.
Well, and it's hard too, because, you know, as a host, my wife has often said, so that's another mention for Elizabeth, if you're keeping track at home, that my personality specifically is like coffee. Some people love it. Some people hate it. And I always say, I add to that, well, you know, sometimes people just have to be around me and just maybe add some sugar to it, you know, add some sweetener to my life. I don't know. But I say all that because I think what you said was first off, very beautifully said. Way better than I could ever say it. So thank you. Very, very complimentary.
You're welcome.
Of you. But the other idea is I like what you said, because I think our world really is missing that in so many ways because of this idea that bad stuff happens.
Yes.
It really does happen. And when that happens, what do we do with it?
Yes.
And when we're around it and we just tend to ignore it, push it aside, push it down, hope it goes away, put it in the closet so no one can see it, put on this fake facade, fake face, fake smile, fake everything. Oh yeah, I'm good, I'm fine, everything's great, but really deep down inside, we're not okay. And I've always looked at forgiveness, especially unforgiveness, as drinking poison, hoping it affects the other person.
Yes.
And
great
I just,
analogy.
And I just think, if we're walking through life like that right now, so maybe speak to that. If someone out there right now, and again, we don't know where this goes. I really don't. People ask me all the time, where does the show go? I don't know. Wherever it goes. But if someone out there right now was dealing with that idea that I just can't forgive this person, what would you tell them?
You know, for me personally, unforgiveness also came out of discontent. You know, this idea that I was not content. And again, you know, if you're talking about abusive situation, that makes complete sense. Who would be content in that? That's crazy talk. And at the same time, you know, it really began for me with looking with gratitude at those things that I could be grateful for. So even in the midst of that, for instance, and one of the reasons I say I would never change that circumstance is that I did anything and everything I could to get out of that house when I could. And again, my outlet was singing. It's a gift I had. It's something that had been encouraged. You know, again, I had already done some recording by the time I was 12, 13. And so I literally went to the high school every chance I got to sing. And through that, my life expanded. And so what I was grateful for then and what I continue to be grateful for now is I could go sing. For hours I could get out of that house and I could go sing, create beautiful music with other people who didn't have a clue what was going on in my life, treated me as a gifted, you know, individual, and let me express myself in that way. And so what I recognize about unforgiveness and forgiveness is that, you know, sometimes forgiveness also starts with me and my discontent. And so if I'm looking for contentment, contentment also comes from being grateful. So I have to first look at gratitude. And I love what you said about, you know, unforgiveness being a poison that we drink, hoping it's going to affect the other person. And that is so true. And what I recognize personally is that's not how it works. And so I can either choose to hold on to that poison and continue to drink it, or I can choose to pour that poison out and to drink the sweet nectar of forgiveness and let that, you know, wash my soul, wash my heart clean from all of the hate and the sickness that can take over a life if we let it.
Well, I think you're a great example of that again, and not that you've accomplished it yet, not that you're there yet, but I think
it's always a work in progress.
Absolutely, but I think you're on your way, and I think that is, again, a tremendous, tremendous testimony to you as a person, and a tremendous testimony to just kind of where you're at in life, and what you've obviously passed on to not only your kids, but future generations as well.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Well, and I imagine many of your listeners too. I mean, I don't know if, you know, you have the situation where people can comment and send you their stories, but I would imagine, you know, if we put out the call and said, you know, tell us about a time that you forgave someone and what you learned through that, or tell us about a time when you, you know, were stuck in unforgiveness for a while and what that experience was like for you, that we would hear from many other people who have stories to tell.
Well, we do. We do, of course, always encourage people to email in, and we're always looking for great guests. So we do encourage that as well. Absolutely. So, Catherine, I want to play a game. Former youth worker that we are,
all
I
right.
figured it's only appropriate we play a game I like to call Senseless. So in here, in this cup of awesome, is a die. And so you can use the cup like Yahtzee, or you can just shake it in your hand, whichever you prefer. And there we go. And you get to dump it out, and we'll see what happens and what number you get.
Number six.
I love number six. That's my favorite question. Of course, I wrote them. So this is a game I like to call Senseless, involving the senses. And so here we go. Catherine, number six is this. It's the wild card question, which is this. You get to have dinner with one person. They're buying. And you get to pick the restaurant. You get to have dinner with anyone dead or alive. Who is it with and why?
Anyone dead or alive. Who is it with? They get to pick the restaurant.
No, you get to pick the restaurant.
Oh, I get to pick the restaurant.
You get to pick the restaurant. And they're paying.
They're paying.
So money is no object.
Ooh.
So I've had people say, well, I want to go to this restaurant, but it's really expensive. And I'm like, but they're paying. So dead or alive, where do you want to go? And who are you eating with?
Who am I eating with, and dead or alive? Gosh, that's a question that's hard to answer on the fly because there are so many options. Goodness gracious.
And only one. I've had people try to say, well, I need this
person.
Well, I need
this person and that person.
Like,
it's got to be a round table combo.
Nope, no, it's one.
Okay, one.
And of course, most would say, oh, the easy one, it's Jesus. But I mean, that's kind of the Sunday school answer. You're better than that, right? If it is, that's fine. I'm not judging you for that.
I would hope I wouldn't take the easy answer out.
Yeah.
I think I would want to sit down. Honestly, the first person that came to mind for me was Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama?
Michelle Obama came to mind for me, which is kind of incredible.
Why Michelle Obama? Now I am dying to know.
So
that is not who I would have thought at all.
I know. So I remember when Barack was first running for president, and there was this little piece on Michelle, and it talked about her experience in the work world and life. And, you know, she came out of healthcare, and just watching how she has embraced this huge role on the stage that her husband took. I would just love to sit down with her and have a conversation about how, as a woman, you know, a Christian woman, a believer, she navigated that, because it's really different. You know, it kind of goes along with our forgiveness topic, because, you know, your husband is under a microscope out on the world stage. He's going to make mistakes. Not everybody's going to be happy with him at all times on any given day. They're going to say things about him and about you. And so how do you navigate that? Continue to walk forward in your faith, believing what you believe, and continue to contribute and have, you know, this impact on the world. But at the same time, more importantly, how was that for you and your husband in terms of your relationship? And how did you keep your self-esteem and confidence going forward on a daily basis? And how many times did you have to forgive people? Really, honestly, it's like, who did you have to? I mean, I wouldn't necessarily ask who that could put her on the spot. But
like, maybe she has a journal somewhere of all these names, like, written down or something.
Yeah, like, what, you know, because there had to be some zingers where, you know, I imagine it's happened, you know, for me, where you want to protect your loved ones and defend them. And
well, the mama bear comes out.
The mama bear comes out in me. Yeah, you've seen that person.
I have personally a few times, in a good way and bad way sometimes. But
that was the first person when
Michelle
you asked the question.
Michelle Obama.
I know. I wouldn't have expected
that
either.
I would have thought that.
I know. I wasn't expecting it either.
That's okay. That's we don't rehearse these things. It
no,
just happens. So
I know.
So Catherine, I just, again, this has been fun. Not only has it been fun, but I think you have so many, we would call them truth bombs almost, right? Like little haymakers, like little, you know, throat punches even at times. I think you had a lot of great wisdom.
Thank you.
And you're a very wise woman. And I just, gosh, I just really admire what you've done and where you've been and where you've come from. And again, your voice is angelic.
Oh, thank you.
It really is. And it really helps me get into worship when I know you're up there. So with that being said, so I'm just going to kind of close with that and see if this works. There we go. A little sounder as we head on out of here. So my guest, Catherine, of course, we want to thank her again for being on Other People's Shoes. I just want to end with this. If you're walking through life and you're thinking, gosh, I need some perspective, give us a try. Other People's Shoes. I am, of course, your host, Neil Matthews. And remember, when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. Again, I want to thank my guest, Catherine. Please stay tuned to next week as we dive into another pair of shoes, or shall we say, try on another pair of shoes. Thank you so much for joining us on Other People's Shoes. I, of course, am your host, Neil Matthews, and I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for giving us a few moments this week. I don't know about you, but I really got a lot out of what Catherine said about forgiveness and even how damaging unforgiveness can be. I mean, after all, isn't it like drinking poison thinking it affects the other person? That was a big takeaway for me. What was your takeaway? Hopefully you had one. If you did, please feel free to share with a friend, family member, or coworker, especially this episode. It might just help them get over that unforgiveness. Stay tuned next week, Wednesday to be specific, as we try on two pairs of shoes at the same time. Now you might be thinking, what? That's right. It might sound a little painful. We might even have to persevere a little bit. A little bit of a hint of who we're going to be sitting down with next week, my guest, Ashley and Justin. Stay tuned for that. Of course, if you would like to hear future episodes of this show, that can be done so at opspodcast.com.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, that can be done so at facebook.com. Feel free to give us a like. We're under Other People's Shoes. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram, that can be done at OPS Podcast Show. If you'd like to tweet us, that can be done at People's Shoes. Just one more thing before we end, and that's this. Remember, when you're walking this walk together, as I think we are, right? Remember this week, when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. Stay tuned next Wednesday as we try on two pairs of shoes with my guests, Ashley and Justin. And it might sound a little painful and have a little perseverance, but we'll get through it together. Stay tuned next week for that. Can't wait till then. See you then.